1 Samuel chapter 17, and familiar story of David and Goliath. And there's a lot of things that we can continually glean from the stories that we know, and we'll begin with 1 Samuel 17 and verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together in Shoco, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoco and Azekah, and these are all difficult names, so we'll skip past some of them. Verse 2, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. Now this is not by any means the first meeting of Israel and the Philistines. They've met together a number of times, but this time was different. It was different because of verse number 4. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height, and he goes on to give all the measurements here, was 6 cubits and a span, and he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass, and he had graves of brass on his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spearhead weight was 600 shekels of iron, about 20 pounds. And one bearing a shield went before him. So in verses 4 through 7, we have the Philistine. And we have, what we have focused on here is all the measurements of the Philistine, all the measurements, all the quantities of this problem that's facing Israel at this time. They'd been to battle before, but this one was a little different because of Goliath. We read later on that he had been a man of war from his youth. In other words, Goliath was engineered. He was noted to be a large kid, perhaps, from the time he was born, noted to be different, and they engineered him to be a problem to Israel. They had met many times on the battlefield, but this time was different. They had engineered this Philistine. And we have there all the measurements that they had focused on, that they had looked at. And they were focused on the size and the quantity of the problem. Reading on, well, we would just notice in verse 10, verse 11, verse 16, verse 23, they continue to point out this Philistine, that's all they keep saying, this Philistine, and surely it got into their whatever form of news they had, and the news traveled around. When David got there, verse 25, and the men of Israel said unto him, unto David, have ye seen this man that has come up? Have you seen him? Have you looked at him? They were very focused on this problem. Notice in verse number 16, and the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Israel was on one side of the mountain. The Philistines were on the other side of the mountain. There was a valley between them, and they could all see in this arena. In this arena, they could all have a very clear view of everything that was happening. And for 40 days straight, he would present himself. What that tells us is, first of all, for 40 days, they've not been fighting. They're at war. They're armed. They have the instruments of war. But for 40 days, they've done nothing. Nothing at all. We see in verse 24, whenever he came up, and all the men of Israel, they saw him, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And this went on for 40 days. 40 days, I envision these men in their trenches. They've got armor. They've got weapons. They've got plans. And yet, they've done nothing. It's an interesting picture to think about this mighty army of God's people, armed, prepared for war, and they've done nothing. Nothing at all. That struck me as I pictured this. What is their plan? What are they going to do? They've done nothing. It's also interesting to note that the Philistines also had done nothing. If the Philistines had this great advantage, as they seem to have, why have they done nothing? We seem to have somewhat of a stalemate. In fact, really, as we begin to look at this, it really is a bluff. If the Philistines really truly believed they had the power to get it done, why didn't they just go and get it done? But for 40 days, they continued their bluff. Israel on one side, the Philistines on the other, and really they were trying to engineer a surrender. That's what they were. They were trying to engineer a surrender. And Goliath was the key piece to engineering a complete surrender. And these were the terms that they kept bringing. They said he would come up and he would talk with them and he would say, "Send a man. And if your man beats me, we'll be your servants. And if I beat your man, then you'll be our servants." And they would make this bluff every day for 40 days straight. They were trying to engineer a surrender. It makes me think of the life of Job. All the things that went on behind the scene that Satan tried to do to engineer Job's surrender. But he never did. And so we see this continues on for 40 days. There's no fighting. It's just this daily bluff. This big, massive giant that is the key centerpiece to their war game that they keep putting out there again and again and again. And it's working. It's working. That's the truth of the matter is, it's working. They've done nothing. They're in the trenches. They're focused on the Philistine. Verse 10, this Philistine. Verse 11, this Philistine. Verse 16, this Philistine. Verse 23, this Philistine. Verse 25, have ye seen him? Verses 4 through 7, we have all the measurements. They've studied him, and they are worried. They're concerned. And this is the way it is oftentimes with our problems. It's very, very easy to do the same thing. And when problems come our way, we need to understand that they are a bluff. They are engineered surrender. This one that was sent out there that made this battle different. You know, and a lot of times we get in a problem, we say, this time it's different. It may seem that way. Satan has got something engineered just perfect to leave you hiding in the trenches. And so this continued on until David showed up to bring food to his brothers. And when we see David get on the scene, the focus changes. Notice we see David on the scene beginning to speak in verse 26. And David said to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine?" Notice what he says as soon as he gets there. You know, they talked about his measurements, and they kept talking about this Philistine, have you seen him? And this is David's perspective. Who is this? Who is he? What is this problem that you guys have? Verse 26, that he should defy the armies of the living God. This is the first mention of God in the whole story. All they kept saying was, this Philistine, this Philistine, this Philistine. And David shows up and says, who is he compared to God? What is he compared to God? That he should defy God's people. And we see David's focus again and again every time he opens his mouth. Verse 37. David said, moreover, the Lord. Beyond all that, the Lord. That delivered me out of the paw of the lion, out of the paw of the bear. He will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. Verse 45. As David approaches the Philistine, his dialogue to the Philistine. We've seen his dialogue to the army. We've seen his dialogue to Saul. His dialogue to the Philistine. Then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied, who you have blasphemed, who you have defamed. I come in his strength. I come in his power." They were focused on the measurements and the quantity and the size and the problem, which really was overinflated. It really was. This was an overinflated problem, and they usually are. Satan has blown them things up, and they're just a balloon. They're a mirage. They've been engineered specifically for you. They are an engineered bluff to engineer your surrender. And when you understand that concerning problems and trials that come your way, you can face them altogether different. Reading on, verse 46, my favorite verse in the chapter, it displays the confidence that David has. This day, he's so resolute. He says directly to the problem, directly to the Philistine, "This day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee, and take thy head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day to the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." This day. And again, he mentions the Lord again. Every time he speaks, he mentions the Lord. Every time they spoke, they mentioned the problem. They mentioned the size of the problem, the quantity of the problem. They had all the measurements, how much his armor weighed, how big his spear was. They knew all about it. And if we were honest, we could tell all the measurements of our problems too. We know all about them. We can tell just how bad it is. Just in case somebody like David wants to come along and tell us it'll be all right, we've got all the measurements to tell him. But you don't understand. It's like this. It's really bad. You don't understand. That's what we say. That's what we do. In case anybody that might have some kind of faith in God comes along, we've got all the measurements. And that reminds me of Ephesians chapter number 3, a passage that our pastor preaches from quite often. This is a prayer of Paul. We know that from verse 14 where he says, "For this cause I bow my knees." He begins to pray for the Ephesian church. He begins to pray that God would strengthen them by His Spirit in the inner man. And what a prayer. He begins to pray for them, and he desired that Christ would dwell in their hearts. And then in verse 18, he said, "That ye may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and the length and the depth and the height, and to know the love of God, which passeth all knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God." As we read verse 19, it lets us know that there's a possibility of being a Christian and not being filled with all the fullness of God. Being saved, but not having all the fullness of God, which seems to be tied with understanding in verse 18 and 19, the breadth, length, depth, and height, and to know the love of Christ. All the fullness of God in verses 18 and 19 seem to be linked to an understanding and a comprehension of the measurements of God and His love. All the blessings that God has for us seem to be linked to that thing there. Understanding, comprehending the measurements of God and His love, which passeth all knowledge, passes all earthly measurements, passes all earthly calculation. And so as we see David, he had made different calculations. I mean, because of the calculations that he had concerning his God, he said, who is this Philistine? Who is this? This is your problem? This is your problem? And he so confidently says in verse 46, this day. How can he say that? Because he knows it's not God's will to have this problem blaspheming God. He knows it's not God's will to have this engineered surrender take place. So the only other option is, as he sees it, this day will the Lord deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee. Take those words with you. They're encouraging words. You know, at times we may be chastened, and God may allow some of our trials to conquer us by his chastening hand. But this was not an issue of chastening. The Philistines had come after them, and it was simply not the Lord's will for the Philistines to get the glory. It was obviously not his will in David's mind, and for that matter, David was extremely confident. He said, this day. I mean, this isn't something that we've got to pray and pray and pray and pray about. This day, we're going to be done with this. This day, we're over this. And then there was two results, as David saw it. The reasons why this was so important. There were two results as David saw it in verses 46 and 47 of 1 Samuel 17. And we understand that because in the last half of the verse he says that. He says, this day the Lord will deliver thee into my hand so that. For this reason. And these are important. That all the earth may know there is a God in Israel. First of all, we're going to get through this because God will not have his name to be defamed. We're going to do this so that all the earth will know there's a God in Israel. And we do. Many times we go through trials that no one should get through, that nobody should make it through, and that nobody without Christ would make it through. And we get through, and we feel like we barely made it sometimes, but we have no idea the testimony that we've been to the world. They look at that and they go, that is strange. I don't understand. How could somebody deal with that? How could they do that? That all the earth may know there's a God in Israel. And they comprehend that there's something different about you. In all kinds of problems, whether they be great, horrific problems, or just daily problems, just the daily things that gnaw us to death that would make the lost person curse and swear and get all red-faced and blow up. From those types of problems to giant problems, all kinds of problems, we become a spectacle to the world. And then the second thing, we see verse 47, the word and, cluing us that there's another thing that David desired. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. The world needed to know there was a God in Israel, and Israel needed to know there was a God in Israel. It's a sad thing. Also, as we look at this story, that David is one in a thousand. People with that kind of faith and that kind of courage, they're one in a thousand. They are few and far between moments in our life. Maybe at times we all have those moments. For whatever reason that we can rise above and persevere, they're one in a thousand. But when we do, it's by the grace of God. So that all the earth will know there's a God in Israel, and that all his people will know how God works. These were David's motives. It's interesting, only the Bible's the only book we can read, and we're given the motives, because only God knows. Only God knows. And so we see the motives of David here. As David arrived on the scene, the horrific tragedy that he saw was that, first of all, the earth didn't know there was a God in Israel by the way they hid in their trenches. And second of all, that Israel didn't know there was a God in Israel. And these were two tragedies that he saw. David did not show up for prosperity's sake. David did not see the giant as a hindrance to prosperity. That's how they all saw the giant. Oh, we're going to end up being servants because of this giant. They saw him as a problem to prosperity. David saw it altogether different, as a problem to the glory of the Lord. He had the right outlook. He had the right motives. And he was focused on the right thing. He was not focused on the Philistine. He was not focused on the measurements, the size. In fact, he seems to blow him off there as he says, "Who? Who is this? That he should defy the armies of the God of Israel." And we see his great confidence there in verse 46. This day, I'm going to tell you, there are some things that if we could just get past looking at the problem, we could get some victory in. There are some things. This giant was engineered, designed for one purpose, to make the hearts of Israel sink. And it was nearly successful. It was designed with that one purpose. It was the one thing. It was the one thing that kept them in their trenches. And I ask you one last thing tonight. What is the one thing? What is the one thing in your life that keeps you in the trench? What is it that may be holding you back? What is it that all your life has left you a Christian with armor, with weaponry, not doing anything, not accomplishing anything? What a sad estate we find Israel in. And furthermore, it's sad that there was only one in a thousand that was able to even perceive the situation in a right way. Only one that could rise up, lead them, have the faith to do this. It's a story that I love to read. There's many things that we can pull out of it again and again. There's a number of marvelous truths. It brings to light the fact that every day we're engaged in a battle. Some days we're wearier than others. Sometimes we're in the trenches. Satan is trying to design and engineer just what would discourage us the most. Sometimes he finds it. He knows us very well. Sometimes he finds that one thing. Anything else we might have powered through, but that one thing. What is your one thing? We'll stop there. We'll have a song. We'll have Uncle Jim come and bring a song, and we'll be dismissed. But some encouraging